This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest the first 2 hours today is Mark Shaw. And he has this wonderful book that you must read. He said, don't worry about, but you really need to read it because he's pieced together so many facts and so much fabulous information that it is a must read for anybody that's the least bit interested in history, because history is prologue. It has changed our present. That act changed everything about what is going on today. It is responsible for everything that may be going on today. So history is vital to understand what is going on. And the name of the book, Denial of Justice, Dorothy Kilgallen, Abuse of Power, and the Most Compelling JFK Assassination Investigation in History. And I agree, that's a fabulous title.
Well, thank you. And you know, we've been amazed. You know, the Reporter Who Knew Too Much became a bestseller. And as you know, movie rights have been optioned for that book. And I hope Denial of Justice is a better, even a better book than that one. But so many people have been reintroduced to Dorothy Kilgallen. And you can go on, YouTube, and you can watch a lot of those shows. It was a fabulous show. I mean, it was an intellectual show, unlike a lot of the quiz shows today. But you can see Dorothy Kilgallen in person, and the kind of person she was. You can watch her last show. She's sharp. She guesses the occupations of a couple of the contestants. She looks great. There's no semblance of evidence that she was having alcoholic or barbiturate drug problems or anything like that.
Absolutely.
And yet, if
not.
You read the autopsy report, which you talked about, and I have that in both books, it's just a compendium of mistakes. They called Dorothy obese in the autopsy repeat. That wouldn't even come close. It talks about one barbiturate in her stomach, secanol, which people will recognize as sleeping pills, but they failed to mention in the report that Tylenol is also in there, which is even a more dangerous sleeping pill. And I was able to find a son of a toxicologist in the medical examiner's office, who, along with a colleague, 3 years later, they had kept some of Dorothy's bodily fluids, and they re-examined them and found another barbiturate in there, phenobarbital. So there were three barbiturates in her stomach, and they couldn't have come from her using them. It didn't make any sense. They obviously had been taken from the capsules and poured into her drink on the night before she died. But, you know, just common sense shows that there should have been an investigation for sure. And if there had been, they would have been able to prove that she had been murdered. And I believe then at that particular point, they could have found this main suspect that I talk about in the book, trace that back to J. Edgar Hoover. And Dorothy would have gotten the justice she deserved. But that obviously is not what happened, and that's what I've been fighting for these last few years for Dorothy.
Right. They also found Pepto-Bismol. So she obviously was having an issue with her stomach. And
yeah, we're able, Deanna, as you know, to trace her last hours, her last days. She was going to make that second trip to New Orleans where she could connect Marcello with Ruby and Oswald. There's no question about that. She told everybody, I'm going to crack the JFK assassination case in and it's going to be the case of a lifetime. She was working on her book for Random House. We know that she showed Bennett Cerf, who was not only a panelist, but also the publisher of Random House, pages from her book. But we also know that on that particular day, she was her hairdresser had gotten her ready, helped her with her makeup and her eyelashes, false eyelashes, and this hairpiece. He was amazed when he watched her on the show that she didn't have on the same dress that she was going to wear, that she was going to meet somebody after the show. We know that she went to P.J. Clark's. This is where Dorothy came in to play again, because I was able to actually find people at P.J. Clark's, which is a famous tavern on 3rd Avenue in New York City, where Dorothy spent the last part of the last night of her life after the show. I sat right next to where she sat when I visited there. She's there. Then she goes to the Regency Hotel, and people can read about where that was few blocks away from her. She died, and she met what was we first of all called the mystery man, who was a man that she was dating at the time named Ron Pataki. We know that she met him there. He denies all of that, but there's no question that he was the guy. He's denied it, and I name him in the book and all of that. But then we're able to show a real common sense scenario as to how Dorothy was poisoned and then left to die in the townhouse. And she died in the middle of the night, and then her body wasn't found until the next morning. And then, as we say, there was this cover-up that went on, and the FBI came in and confiscated her documents, including her JFK assassination file. So, it was just basically the fact that Dorothy knew too much. She was a reporter who knew too much, and that was the title of the first book, and now Denial of Justice, because that's what happened, and that's the title of the second book.
Right. And you mentioned also several possible people who may have had a hand in this. Not seriously, but just that were very suspect. One was Frank Sinatra, who was very, he was not a very nice person at all.
Yeah.
Terrible.
No,
he took after his mother. He never forgot anybody. You did something against him, and he was out to get you. And talk about.
Now, let's talk about Frank for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure. Because go ahead.
When I go into a restaurant or a bar or something, and I hear Frank Sinatra, I want to throw up.
Sure.
Yes, talented, gifted singer, no question about it. But he was a bad guy.
He was.
And Frank Sinatra, there's a photograph in the new book of him with his mafia buddies. He was a mafia wannabe like Ruby and Belli and all those people. He loved to be around them. He loved to be the big shot. But he would beat up reporters who would criticize him. He was involved in he's a womanizer who treated women very badly. He got in crosshairs with Dorothy because, while they had been friends at one point, she wrote some scathing articles about him, about his bimbo girlfriends and his affiliation with the mafia. And he came back and called her the chinless wonder and made fun of her appearance and sent her a fake tombstone to her office and all of that. And, he was a bad guy. And there's no question that, that Frank Sinatra had the motive to get rid of Dorothy Kilgallen if he wanted to.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
sure.
Whether he was a part of this whole plot with J. Edgar Hoover and Carlos Marcello and Sam Giancana, who was a friend of the mobster, who was a friend of Sinatra's, I wouldn't put it past him, because you have to go back to the 60 election again, because who did Joe Kennedy use as a conduit to Sam Giancana and all of the mafia people? Well, he used Frank Sinatra, who was a friend of the Kennedys.
Right.
So Sinatra was right in the middle of all this. So when I hear songs by him and all this, I just think it's unfortunate that people, sure, they're going to listen to him, and I understand that, but they also need to know about the dark side of Frank Sinatra, and he was a bad guy, as I say.
Yes. Yes, he was a very bad guy who, as you said, he referred to women as broads, and he was just terrible. He was a piece of trash. That's all
he was.
Thank
you for saying that. I couldn't put it better. Thank you.
and you also talk about Richard, the husband, who ultimately committed suicide. What a sad, tragic figure he was. He just... he was referred to as Mr. Kilgallen, and she was really making all of the money for the household, and he was not a nice person
Well, no, it's tragic. The whole thing is tragic. The tragedy of a senseless death of JFK and a senseless death of Dorothy. But if you go to the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, and also we have a photograph of it in the book and a link there. There was a show in the middle 1950s called Person to Person with Edward R. Murrow. And, it was a hit show, and he interviewed the celebrities of the day one-on-one. He used to sit there with a cigarette in his mouth, and he would interview these people. And you'll see an interview with Dorothy and Richard, and they have the two. Dorothy had three children, Carrie, mm-hmm. the youngest, Jill, the middle one, and Dickie, the older one. Mm-hmm. And you'll see two of the kids with Richard and Dorothy, and they're just the happiest people. He's a wonderful family. They talk about Richard's successful career on Broadway as a producer, and Dorothy at the top of her career with What's My Line, and in there, she talks about of all the careers she had, being a newspaper woman was the most important to her. I mean, this is just what. A few years before, she died, 8 or 9 years before she died. It's just tragic because they were so happy. But mm-hmm. Richard's life went downhill. His Broadway productions didn't do very well. He opened a couple restaurants that failed. He basically became an alcoholic, running around with every woman that he could find. And they really, in effect, became estranged. Now, they didn't divorce. Dorothy wouldn't have done that. She was Catholic, another reason right. why she wouldn't have committed suicide. But it was a sad situation, and in the book, again, it's a true crime murder mystery, so people can make up their own mind, but Richard's a suspect because Dorothy was going to change her will. She was going to give more money to little Carrie, the son, than to Richard, so he had a lot to lose here. Now, in the book, what I give a couple motives as to why it would have happened and how it could have happened, and I'm going to leave that for the reader to take a look at. But one thing recently that has come to me, Deanna, the children, the three of them, have always failed to cooperate with any investigation into Dorothy's death, and that includes mine. I contacted Jill and talked to her, and she didn't want anything to do with it. The other two boys, I've made contact with them, the same feeling they want to let it go. Well, that's fine, but recently I've gotten it in my own mind that some way or another, Richard might have been involved with Hoover, Marcello, these other people. He had no money. She was going to cut him out of the will. He could have been duped into somehow or another setting up Dorothy.
Accommodating.
And if that happened, it's the reason why the children would not want to get involved. I mean, their memories of this are terrible. Dorothy died under suspicious circumstances, and then, as you said, Richard committed suicide. So I've come to wonder whether they don't really suspect that Richard had something to do with Dorothy's death, and that would, solidify my belief that that may be the reason why they've never wanted to cooperate with any investigation. You think that makes sense?
Yes, yes. And they were very, the daughter was very upset because she wanted some of her mother's belongings, and Richard just did not act appropriate as a grieving spouse.
It was just very interesting
the way that he was acting.
Didn't, and they finally had to contest the will, and,
yes.
He didn't cooperate and wouldn't give Jill Dorothy's belongings, some of his
the jewelry, some of the things that
the jewelry
that she
and
should have had.
That's right, and we know that he lied about the day of her death because in the autopsy there's an interview with him by Detective Doyle, and he says that Dorothy came home around 11:30 and she had a drink
That's
and went
true.
To bed, something like that. Well, that is even possible based on everything that we found otherwise. So.
Right.
Richard certainly could have been involved one way or another because he was at a low point of his life, and either accidentally or accidentally on purpose, he could have been involved with poisoning Dorothy's drink before she went to bed. If you want to read a very disturbing account of what it was like for little Carrie, her youngest son, when he came home from school, and tried to talk to his dad about Dorothy dying, his mother dying, you'll read that in Denial of Justice. And the first time I did, it brought tears to my eyes. So I'll leave that for people to read. But it's very disturbing, that's for sure.
Yes, poor little child.
Yes.
And there was somebody also got a picture of him by himself in the park.
I think that was a warning to Dorothy.
A warning.
I think maybe you'll agree. They may have. She said that she had been threatened. Remember, I said she told the hairdresser, my family and I have been threatened. You know, in all of that. I think they may have tried to threaten her in some ways and let her know and warn her to quit getting involved in this JFK assassination. In fact, the butler's daughter that I talked about tells the fact that her father warned her to be careful. Mark Sinclair, the hairdresser, and Simpson, they both warned her to be careful.
Right.
But she kept going on, except that the fact that she must have been terrified, as you know. Right before she died, there was a photograph in a New York newspaper of little Carrie running across Central Park, and Dorothy was just so upset because it obviously showed that somebody had been following little Carrie, and that really scared her. Now, whether she would have gone ahead and stopped that investigation in the JFK assassination, we don't know, but she died shortly thereafter, so that was a warning to Dorothy, and you can imagine as a mother how terrified she was about that.
And Carrie was very special to her. It was just, you could tell there that he was special. Of course, he was the youngest child, and he wasn't Richard's child. And she felt that Richard had made an attempt to try to be a father, even though he wasn't the biological father.
That happened. You know, I'm amazed, and I just want to thank you so much because you've obviously done your homework and looked at the books and all of that, and that doesn't always happen with interviews, and so I appreciate that very much because you're bringing points to the surface here that maybe I wouldn't have talked about. All of my books, whether, you know, it's biographies or whatever, I the good, the bad, and the ugly in my books, I try to give a balanced portrayal of the subject that I'm talking about. And this was a tough one because with Dorothy, her life was so exceptional. She was so remarkable that when I came across this information, I didn't know exactly what to do with it because it's family matters. But through eyewitnesses, primary sources and all that, including Brenda DeJordan, I was able to show that Carrie was not Richard's biological son. Dorothy had Richard started running around with a lot of women, Dorothy was lonely, and she took up with, first of all, a singer who was popular at the time. His name was Johnny Ray.
Johnny Ray.
And his main song was "The Little White Cloud That Cried." He was much younger than Dorothy, and they fell in love. He was alleged to have been a homosexual, but obviously he was a bisexual because it had this torrid love affair. And I didn't know how far that went until one of the hairdressers in a videotaped interview talked about the fact that Carrie may very well have not have been Richard's son, but Johnny Ray's. And then I was able to confirm that with two other sources, including Brenda. And so there's no question that if you look at photographs, by the way, in color, Richard has dark hair, Dorothy has dark hair, but, little Carrie has kind of blondish red hair.
Right.
So,
freckles.
That was another concluding point of that. And Dorothy then believed that Richard would not take care of Carrie because of him knowing he was not the biological father. And that tied in and connected then in with the evidence we had that she was changing her will so that little Carrie would get more of the proceeds if she died. So I wanted readers to see that. It's not something that I thought should be hidden. And I must say that most everyone who's read the books, both of them, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice Now, have thanked me for bringing that forward because it explains a lot about what was happening to Dorothy right before she died.
Right. And she was very lonely. Her husband, and they were in love. When they got married, they loved each other. And for a while, things worked out really well. We do have a short commercial break. We will be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Alrighty, welcome back. Our guest the first 2 hours today is Mark Shaw, and the website is markshawbooks.com. You want to also visit the Dorothy Kilgallen story.org. He is the author of the recent publication of this fabulous, fabulous book that you simply must buy. It's called Denial of Justice, Dorothy Kilgallen, Abuse of Power, and the Most Compelling JFK Assassination Investigation in History. And as you said, I'm glad that you did include that, some of the warts, I guess. But mm-hmm. She was lonely, and they did have a good marriage, and then all of a sudden he fell apart, and just he became somebody totally different than who she married. She was starved for affection, and so I don't blame her for what she did. I really don't.
You have to think about him. You know, Dorothy was such a big star. I mean, I have photographs of her around the writing studio here, and I'm looking at one right now that you know is in the new book, Denial of Justice, and that is Dorothy sitting at Warner Brothers across from Bette Davis, who was a film huge film star at the time. Now, Dorothy is 22 years old at that time. She was a college dropout at 18 years old, and there she is sitting at Warner Brothers looking at, they were looking at making a movie out of a book she had written and all of that, and there she is with Betty Davis, for God's sakes.
Right.
We have her at the Truman White House. We have her, you know, with George Harrison in the book. We have her with all of these celebrities. You must imagine how big of a star she was at the time. And here's Richard. Unfortunately, his Broadway producing career goes down the toilet. He opens a couple restaurants. They don't work. And he's being called Mr. Kilgallen by most people and everything. Mm-hmm. That's tough. That's tough to take. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, unfortunately, instead of trying to work himself out of it, he turned to alcohol. And, you know, just became not even a sliver of the man he was when Dorothy when Dorothy married him. And so, you know, what can she do? You know, she ends up finding Johnny Ray and affection there, and then this Ron Pataki, this journalist that I mentioned before. Those mm-hmm. were the two affairs she had before she died. The one with Johnny Ray was exceptional for her. I think it was true love that she had with him, and she kind of mothered him a little bit because he was younger, mm-hmm. too. So that was amazing. Unfortunately, the love affair that she had with Ron Pataki, the journalist, in my estimation, and the evidence I think proves, resulted in her death. So
yes.
She had one wonderful love affair, and the other one was lethal, that's for sure.
Yes, for sure. What a shame. And I can certainly understand why the children wouldn't want to talk about this, wouldn't want to talk about their father. Now, Carrie did have a blog spot that he, but then he took that down. It would be interesting to know. Well, and when you consider their ages, one of them was born when? In 41. Dickie was born in 41. They had children, and then the daughter was born 2 years later, and then Carrie came along 11 years later. I think that's what it was.
I just had a reader of the book get in touch with me, and this is, again, I would encourage anybody listening to your program, if they have information about Dorothy's life and times or death, to get in touch with me, because this is where I've gotten all my information. People have kind of done the research for me, but I just had a reader who says that she's been in contact with Carrie in He lives in Georgia, and she's been in contact with him, and, you know, there may be a connection there that I might have. Because Carrie actually, in the 70s, did start to look into his mother's death. He tried to get mm-hmm. some information from the New York District Attorney's Office, as I have done, which is very difficult to do. As I say, corruption covers up corruption. You know, Carrie, I think, is the one of the three. You know, I don't know if they've read the books. I don't know. I can't tell. I have a hunch that they have, but I've always felt like that I would hear from Carrie. So maybe Dorothy is starting to make that happen because, as you know, shortly after the book, the Reporter Who Knew Too Much was released, I was able to get the New York District Attorney's Office to say they would investigate Dorothy's death, and they promised me a thorough investigation, and I gave them all this information about the witnesses I had and the documents that we needed, the police report, all these other things. And so for about 8 months, everything was going great. I was conversing with their chief and investigator. Looked like we were going to get that thorough investigation. And then of August of 2017, they said they couldn't go any further with it. They hadn't found any evidence about Dorothy being murdered. It was just ludicrous. It was a real bogus investigation. And it just shocked me and disturbed me a great deal, and almost all of the people who had read the book, because we really felt like that we were going to get to the truth about what happened with Dorothy. I'm hoping that Carrie may know about all that, and at some point he will say to himself, look, I really want to know what happened to my mother, because if he reads the book, I will tell you, there are two accounts of Jill saying to two different people, my mother was murdered. There's also Jill's best friend who said that Dorothy was quieted. You know, there's admissions there that they knew that Dorothy did not die of an accidental death due to barbiturates and alcohol. So I'm just hoping, Deanna, that that Carrie might come around at some particular point and we could speak with him and we could get more information about what happened to Dorothy.
Indeed. All righty, we'll be right back. And I want to bring up Richard again with all the barbiturates and things that he had in his stash. We'll be right back.
Yes.
are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. Our guest is Mark Shaw. He is the author of The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, and his most recent book on Dorothy Kilgallen is Denial of Justice, Dorothy Kilgallen, Abuse of Power, and the Most Compelling JFK Assassination Investigation in History. And whatever entity was involved, whether it's the Justice Department, the FBI, or whatever, whatever entity was engaged in some kind of cover-up, has the ability to maintain that cover-up right up through today, which is why you were unable to get some information that you were seeking. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about Richard's stash of drugs.
Yeah, Carrie talks about, you know, Dorothy Kilgallen was very good at finding little bits of information that didn't make sense with regard to every case that she investigated, including the JFK assassination. For instance, you know, Jack Ruby always said that he was so distraught after JFK died, and she found in the testimony at trial that a couple of days later he was at the Dallas Morning News trying to sell this twist mechanism of some sort, a twist board of some sort. That didn't make any sense to her. And all of her columns, by the way, that she wrote about the JFK assassination, the first one, The Oswald File Must Not Close, 6 days after JFK was killed, are up on the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, and they're also in both of the books. But what you mentioned about Richard is another situation where I hope that I learned from Dorothy, because you mentioned that young Carrie Calmer, who was Dorothy's son, had a blog. And I was able to go look at it before he took it down, and found that he was really talking about the fact, and it was also in another publication, that for whatever reason, obviously Richard was involved with drugs as well as alcohol, and then he had this stash of barbiturates. And so what does that do? Well, it gives you suspect that Dorothy, Dorothy died of an overdose of barbiturates. How did she get them? Well, if Richard had a stash of those, and that was Carrie's word, stash, that you used, then it's not difficult to believe that what I talked about before, that, you know, Richard's down and out. He's an alcoholic. He's not thinking straight. He knows that Dorothy's not having anything to do with him anymore. She's having this affair with this journalist, Ron Pataki. He's upset that the will's going to be changed and all this. Well, if he has those drugs and have the availability of them, then it isn't a great stretch to believe that, let's say on the last night she died that, Dorothy couldn't sleep and she said, I need something to help me. And so whether he's drunk or not and knows what he's doing, the possibility, of course, is, and I say that's why this is a true crime murder mystery, people can make up their own mind, but the possibility exists that he goes to this stash of his and he gets these barbiturates, and unfortunately, either accidentally or accidentally on purpose, he takes those capsules, empties it into a drink. She was a vodka and tonic drinker, and empties those barbiturates in there, and those are the cause of death. She's poisoned by those barbiturates. So it's that little thing that I learned about from Carrie, that Richard had access to those kinds of drugs, that it connects in with the mystery of all of what happened with Dorothy when she died.
And he was a weak individual, very weak individual who was vulnerable to...
Vulnerable is the word, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he he's jealous.
Yes.
We see this a lot in celebrity marriages where, one person, when they marry, they're both on top. And then, mm-hmm. One of the partners has a downfall of some sort. And so there's the jealousy that comes in there. And here Dorothy is out there, and she's, telling everybody she's going to crack the greatest murder mystery in history, JFK's death. She's going to solve all that and everything. She's getting all the publicity. She's on What's My Line. She's at the radio show. She's got the the newspaper column. She's got everything. And if somebody came along and said, listen, we'd like for you to help us. We've had it with your wife, and she needs to stop investigating the JFK assassination, and we'll make it worth your while. In fact, it's interesting because the chief investigator for the New York District Attorney's Office, Richard Ramos, when I first began talking to him, he talked about the fact that Ron Pataki, the journalist, could have very well been susceptible to being bribed to set up Dorothy. Well, the same thing could have happened with Richard based on his access to those barbiturates.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And since she was so busy, who knew who he was hanging around with?
Very true. Very true. Good point. Very good point. And thought of that. Very good point.
They had a lot of celebrities in their home. Just on a regular basis, they at Christmas time particularly, their home was just inviting, and she attracted people. Jane Mansfield was there, and who was there the morning that they discovered her body? Which star was that?
That was the actress.
What's her name?
Betty Davis, but Joan Crawford.
Yes.
Yeah. And Brenda, again, you like to do this, and so do I. You want to find these primary sources, and that's why finding Brenda DeJordan, Dorothy's butler's daughter, was gold, because she was right there in the townhouse. And I don't want people to think that these are sad books in a lot of ways, because I really do talk about You know, Dorothy's life and times, and there's all of these incredible images in the book of Dorothy with celebrities and all of that. But what you just talked about shows the celebrity status that she had. This townhouse that we had was kind of that she had was kind of a mansion on East 68th Street. That was the place to go. And when she had these parties, I mean, Brenda talks about Jane Mansfield. You mentioned being at one of those parties and starting to take off all of her clothes, and James Clement, the butler, has to help her put them back on. There's an interesting story of James going to the door and opening the door, and here's this small in stature African American man, and right off the bat, without any prejudice really, he thinks it's a delivery guy, and it ends up being Sammy Davis Jr.
Right.
And you know, they were all there. Johnny Mathis was there. I was able to find a woman that has been his partner for many, many years and interview her. She lives in Los Angeles with Johnny, and I was able to find out from her that Dorothy had a shoe collection, but she went further than that. She had an autographed shoe collection.
And, oh, my gosh.
And I was able to confirm that Johnny Ray had signed a pair of his shoes for her. And so, you know, it was a wonderful time of her life, and that's what's so tragic about the fact that she ended up dying at the age of 52 years old. It's just tragic, that's for sure.
Indeed. Okay, there was Pataki. I kind of wondered about him because she knew that the people around her, she trusted the people around her, and they were more like family. The people that lived within the home, there was a tutor. Carrie had a tutor. They were upstairs on the fourth floor, so they wouldn't have heard anything. But it was like family, and Dorothy treated these people like family. She was very giving and loving and accepting of so many people she didn't consider them servants, but her family, and they were with her children, and her children obviously had a very good relationship with the people who lived there and cared for their needs, because Dorothy did leave on a frequent basis, but she knew that her children were safe.
Well, the whole story of how she found the butler and the butler's wife, James Clement, and you know, we have a picture in there of James, and you know, he was an African American. They went to a party at another people's home and saw James and his wife, and his wife was the cook, and
right.
You know, there, and they were enamored with them, and they invited him to their home, and then they became basically in many ways her best friends.
Right.
Two hairdressers, and James and his wife, they were her best friends, and she was very close-mouthed. She had a circle of friends outside Joan Crawford and some others in the celebrity status, but for the most part, some people at What's My Line, but for the most part, she was a homebody in many ways. She was away a great deal, and she was covering all the big events of the time, all the Broadway openings and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she also was treating these people like they were family, and there's an account in Denial of Justice that I think people will really enjoy that Brenda talks about in terms of what, you know, that they were at the dinner table and they were looked upon almost as her children in that way. She had that side to her. Yeah, she was brash. Yeah, she was tough in her columns. If she didn't like what some celebrity was doing, she would go after them and all of that. She had a poison pen side to her. She was tough. But at home, she was this soft woman. Johnny Ray even mentioned I think his quote was, she was the softest woman he ever knew. And she loved him and he loved her. And so that was a very special relationship for her when it all collapsed with Richard. But that's a side to Dorothy that, and you'll read about her exploits, you know, at an early age, she was involved in something called the Race Around the World, where she raced reporters from two of the other newspapers, the Times and one of the other ones, and they ran around the world in commercial jets,
right,
from all around the world, and it was kind of a race around the world, and and Dorothy took on these two men, and I was able to find a book that she wrote about it called Fly Baby Fly, which they made a movie out of. And I was able to find that book, and excerpts from that are in the new book, Denial of Justice, because they show how much fun she had. And while she was serious about the race, she was courageous in getting into all these small planes and in the commercial planes and all of that at the time. So, you know, I just have such respect for her, and I'm so pleased that I was able to bring her back to life now, and people can learn more about this incredible woman.
And she was incredible. They were eating but Dale's sandwiches and things, and it was just amazing. I had forgotten about that, but that's kind of right at the beginning of the book. Uh-huh. And yeah, it was great. And she loved her father. Her father.
Good. Yeah.
Her father was a newspaper guy, and she wanted to be like her dad. She was very close to her father and to her mother also. And her mother may also blamed Richard for her death. But she was very close to her parents, and she did talk them out of going to college. And she was at the newspaper office. And she, one time she wanted to stay overnight to finish something. She was so dedicated. This was her life, her love, and it began early because she saw what her father was doing. And
That's right.
So
yeah, people have told me, they readers have told me, and again, I think at last count I've gotten almost 1,000 emails from people around the world, and I mean around the world: Australia, India, Germany. I just talked to a guy the other day from Sweden. You know, people have just become enamored with Dorothy. But you know, you talk about her father, and you know, that's amazing in many ways, because Jim was a crack reporter, first in Chicago and then moved the family to New York. But he was the foundation for her. He was the role model for her. He told her the most important thing about anything you're going to do is finding the truth.
Yes.
That's it. And that was her credo the rest of her career. She didn't, you know, this fake news we have these days, Dorothy wouldn't even have known what that was, because unlike people today who throw out these scandalous headlines, you know, that have no basis to them and then fit facts to those conclusions, Dorothy never did that. She went out and found the facts. She printed the facts. She let people make up her own mind. And she got that from Jim. And mm-hmm. and then, you know, it was just predictable because she saw him, what he was doing and who he was interviewing and how excited he was about his job. And so she trailed along with him. Finally, he got her an internship at the New York Journal American, which was one of the biggest newspapers at the time. And pretty soon then she said, look, I don't want to go to college at all.
Right.
I want to be a newspaper woman. And she started right away. You said that point about staying all night and rewriting something. She didn't care about her status as a woman. She took on all of the male reporters, and she kind of became what we would call one of the guys.
Right.
Remember when she's on that trip around the world, you know, she's hanging out with them and she's drinking with them and she's having fun with all those people. She didn't see any gender barrier. She didn't see why, you know, there could be anybody who would think that women couldn't do what men could do. I mean, it's ludicrous as today. It was just as ludicrous back then. It's just so, it's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. But there were those barriers to her, but Dorothy was never going to let those barriers get in the way of her succeeding at what she wanted to do. And most of all, that was being as much of an integrity type reporter as her father was.
Right. And I don't think anybody ever viewed her other than what she was, just a reporter who was seeking the truth. They didn't view her as, oh, this woman.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, if you don't mind. I hope it's in the photographs in the book, but in both books, A Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice. But on the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, there's a larger photo. It's Dorothy at the Dr. Sam Shepard case. And if people remember, Dr. Sam Shepard, mm-hmm. it was a famous case in Ohio. He mm-hmm. was charged with killing his wife, and it became the movie The Fugitive with Harrison Ford and the television series and everything. There's a photograph of her standing in the middle of the courtroom, and all the other reporters, Deanna, as you know, are standing around her in admiration.
Mm-hmm.
That was Dorothy Kilgallen, and that's
right.
Who she was, and that's her legacy for sure. But that photograph says everything.
It does. It really does. I'm so glad that you included all the images. It just really gives you more of an insight as to her standing with her peers, although she was above her peers in many respects.
Well, she was, but
they respected her.
Yeah, and also with her family. There's the wonderful, maybe you saw the wonderful photograph of she and Jill, or her and Jill, I guess it would be, right. Her and Jill and Carrie at a piano, and she's playing the piano, and they're singing together. I mean, that says it all about the kind of mother that she was.
When she was home, she was a mother. And you can tell just the way that she's down on the floor playing with them.
Uh-huh.
She was a mother. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
All righty. We have a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
And we have Mark Shaw. He is the author of Denial of Justice, Dorothy Kilgallen, Dorothy Kilgallen, Abuse of Power, and the Most Compelling JFK Assassination Investigation in History. One thing that we haven't touched on is that the gentleman, the DA, District Attorney Henry Wade, was kind of a friend of Ruby's, correct?
They well, again, you know, I would go to, again, this is not me speaking. This is the trial testimony, Ruby trial transcripts testimony speaking. It's right there. It's in the book on my website, markshawbooks.com. You can see this as well, where there's testimony, not only that Ruby watched the assassination as it took place, not only that he was stalking Oswald and he got into the basement, you know, he was going to be there when Oswald was transferred. He got into the basement making like a reporter. He used the police department friends to get in there. But also the night that Oswald was arrested, you know, and they had this news conference, here's Ruby up in the police headquarters. He got in there acting like a reporter again. And he's introducing, listen to this, introducing other reporters to Henry Wade, the district attorney. Henry, come
right
over here. You know,
yes,
and all of that. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Now,
isn't that
people
amazing?
Are going to ask themselves, how did they miss all this? How did the report? I just had a colleague of mine go to the Southern Methodist University in Dallas and look to see what the newspaper, you know, editions had in it about this time that this kind of evidence was being presented at the trial. There's nothing in there. Somehow or another, they were so brainwashed by Hoover about Oswald alone that they missed it all. It's not even in any of those newspaper accounts. It shows that Ruby was a friend of the district attorney who's prosecuting him, for heaven's sake.
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
You can't make that up.
No. Oh, my gosh. And, of course, Dorothy never testified before the Warren Commission. It was just, and they were, of course, Hoover called the Warren Commission as a cover-up, and it's been covered up ever since. But but you have brought all of this to the forefront, and I'm just so happy, and I respect your work so much, and I'm so grateful that you've done this.
Well, I'll tell you what, people, they can look at all the books written about the JFK assassination. You'll never find Dorothy Kilgallen in there.
Nope,
it's not
you won't
in any
find
of them.
A word. Not
because,
a word.
Because they're all in that Oswald alone, you know, euphoria somewhere or another, out in that fog or whatever, and Dorothy wasn't that way, and so they're not going to permit her voice. So hopefully in the future, young people and others will let Dorothy get into the action, because I do believe, as the subtitle says, it's the most credible JFK assassination in history, and she's responsible for it.
It is. And she was born in Chicago. So
that's right. Yes.
I live in the suburbs, and I would be tempted to try and find where she was born. And I feel a closeness to her because of your work.
Well,
and I thank you for that.
Well, she and you know, I'm a Midwesterner myself. I'm originally from Indiana, and so I will tell you, I think, you know, and with all due respect to the West Coast and everything, there's Midwestern values, like you have, and like Dorothy had. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, thank you so very much for being on the program, Mark.
Oh, thank
Take
you.
Care.
I appreciate it so much. You're the best, so thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. Stay with us with our next guest. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
You're